course, because once you have wine in France,
you can never go back. Mm-hmm.
I also think I'm, like, ruined for a wine for life, because the first wine that I tried was when I was in Italy. Like, when I was in Tuscany, and so now I'm just like,
Wow.
You had some Tuscan feet all over your grape juice, and now you're better than us.
She's so
I didn't say
superior.
I was better than anybody else. I'm just saying,
your
I don't think I can ever think that box wine is good at this point. I've
if
been
you
ruined.
Pour liquor in grape juice, that's wine to me. That's about all it is.
Actually, welcome back is like assuming that they've already been here. And if this is your first time, where the hell have you been?
Oh, well, welcome.
No,
yes, welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, and welcome. I'm your host and spiritual guide, Sean Barber. I am joined by our resident expert in death, Miss Nicole Jewett.
Hello.
And the man who knows nothing, Mr. Ethan Black.
I know my headphones are too damn loose. I can't fix them.
He does know that, ladies and gents.
Now, would you guys believe me if I told you that this was week 5 of season 2?
Yes, only because I'm involved in the writing process and can see that this episode is indeed number 5. But no, it does not seem like that.
It really doesn't feel like
it. It feels like we just came back.
I keep no track of time.
Ethan has no idea what's going on.
I keep days and that's about it.
Ethan doesn't even believe in time.
You won't know what time it is unless you look at a clock. And who made clocks? Men. And women.
Yeah, that's true. Like, what time is it, actually?
I don't know.
We kind of just decided that it's
7:01. Time
is
just a complete construct of human imagination.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense, but
the only real
who's to
you
say
have
that
is
it isn't 36 o'clock right now?
The only times you have are sun o'clock and moon o'clock. That's about it.
Light and dark.
Low noon.
Low noon.
See, okay, everybody, is low noon a thing?
This is a debate that we've had. Yes, we had an argument about this.
If high noon exists, I debate that low noon is midnight. Ethan was on my side.
I'm all right with the idea of low noon being midnight, but originally they were arguing that low noon would be 12:30, which is just absolutely incorrect.
Well, when is high noon?
12.
What's the opposite of noon?
Midnight.
So what's half of midnight?
No.
Half of midnight? That would be 6 p.m.
No, like midnight as a whole entire time. Like half of 12 is 12:30.
No, but see
because high noon
midnight,
would
I'm
be
right
the top
with
of the hour, and then low noon would be the bottom of the hour, which if you're looking at a clock, arguably would be when it's the minutes are 30.
I thought the bottom okay. So when you're listening to the news and they go to the weather and they're like on the bottom of the hour, do they mean 1:30 or do they mean like 1:50?
Oh yeah,
that's
fair.
I think the bottom of the hour is right before the next hour starts.
So would low noon be like 12:59?
That would be annoying.
Yeah, it would.
That
what
would
time
be really
is it?
Pointless.
Give it a minute. Low noon.
Hold on. Ask me again in 59 seconds. 3, 2. Okay, low noon. Anyway, we've done absolutely nothing constructive thus far.
That's all right. Something else. Ever since last week and we did conspiracies, I've been seeing conspiracies everywhere I go.
Wait a minute. I have a good one.
Okay.
I heard that there's a conspiracy that Hitler was actually a dolphin.
No.
Get it?
A dolphin.
That's pretty good.
Nein.
Right?
Adolf Schuttermeier, yeah.
I think that's hilarious.
Adolf Schuttermeier.
I saw that
when I was laying in bed last night, and I was like, I have to tell Sean and Ethan.
No, we were talking to
a dolphin in the bunker, and they were like, the fuck is this?
They had no way to explain
it. Of course it was Hitler.
Exactly.
We were talking to one of our roommates. I don't even remember what we were talking about, but all I could think of was that it was it was about Xbox and how games take up so much storage. I'm like, well, who do you think benefits from that taking up so much storage, and who do you think they're going to have to buy more storage from? I'm like, all right. I gotta
calm down
from the conspiracy.
Take your tinfoil hat off.
That's
breathe.
Just called marketing schemes.
That's true. Well, now that we're all terrified of conspiracies, we have something else to be terrified about this week, and that's counterfeiting. So today's episode is going to be all about counterfeiting.
I take it this is another day where Ethan has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think Ethan has any clue.
I don't.
Okay, cool.
But
I only have a loose idea of what's going on, too, this time around, so...
You're in my ring now, bitch.
The counterfeiting that we're going to be talking about isn't going to be easy stuff like money. That's lame.
Oh, yeah, that's,
money,
that's bitch stuff
boo,
right there.
Boo. No, we're going to be talking about some cool counterfeiting, including stamps. That's an actual
that's
thing.
So much cooler
happening.
Than Benjamin's.
Yeah, arguable statement there, but continue. We'll see where
what
this goes.
What could possibly be cooler than stamps?
Some wine bottles.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Very serious.
These are supposed to be cooler than money?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm going
to Okay, we'll check back in with you at the end of the episode
yeah.
and see if you still
you
think
you watch yourself
not as cool.
for now.
I just never thought of anything counterfeiting besides money. Like, yeah. obviously fraud and shit, but I just never called it counterfeit.
And I'm going to keep the third one as a secret because I want to hear you laugh your ass off when we get there because it is going to smack you all the way from right field.
It's hilarious.
I'm looking.
It's great. It's really great. All right. After listening today, go find us on Instagram at RuleOf3333 and on Facebook at RuleOf3Podcast. And make sure you drop a rating and review wherever you're listening to us. Let's get to counterfeiting.
Woo!
We've got three dumbass hosts, three crazy stories, and no fucking clue what we're doing. This is Rule of Three. Ethan, take it away. Wasn't half bad, mister.
Yeah. I appreciate the
that
applause.
That wasn't half bad.
That was pretty okay. Golf clap for that.
Thank you. I prefer snaps. My harmonicing is more edgy. Thank you. Slam a harmonica.
ASMR snaps into
the
mic.
You have to go to the coffee shop and do some slam harmonica, spoken word harmonica.
Oh my God, when I was in seventh grade, we did like a poetry day. Like people invited their parents to come in and we like set up a cafe in my English teacher's classroom and people like sang and read poetry. It was
that's
the weirdest
cool.
thing ever.
No.
It was kind of cool if anybody was actually good.
Okay, fair.
It would have been cool if yeah. it was done well.
All right, are you ready to hear about how counterfeiting stamps is actually a problem?
Yeah.
All right. Let's do
it. Get ready.
So our first story today is about something that seems so innocent, but you all know that they're annoying as fuck. These things are so stupid. We're talking about postage stamps, those little pricks that you have to put on your letters, or you could just text people like a normal human being if you want to talk to them.
No stamps required on a text message.
No, but we still have stupid things like some bills have to be sent in and important paperwork has to get mailed. So unfortunately, stamps still exist and we just have to deal with them. It's a reality of our life. Not only are they annoying to remember to buy and make sure you have, because if you need to mail something, you go, oh, fuck, I need a stamp.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Nowadays, you don't mail things often enough to have that constantly on your mind.
Oh, do I have stamps?
Maybe back in the day, you were like, oh, yeah, I got to pick up stamps because, you know, that's a thing you have to do all the time. You have to mail bills in once a month. But now you don't really.
And before any boomers come after us, get over it, okay?
This is just the world we live in, all right?
Get
we just don't mail things as much as we needed to in the past.
Stamps are pretty.
Not only are they annoying, but they also are getting more expensive every year, which is fucking stupid.
Like
one
gas.
Stamp is like 55 cents for standard shipping this year. 55 cents.
And that's the cheapest one, right? The other ones that Sean was looking at earlier, they're like 20. You can get stamps that are like $26 a piece.
Yeah, for like Priority Express shipping. Bitch, Amazon Prime delivers stuff in 2 days.
I feel like Amazon Prime
stamps.
There has to be something wrong going over at Amazon. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, the guy got his wife divorced or something.
Yeah.
And she took half his money,
honestly,
right?
She made his pockets hurt, that's for sure.
Yeah,
well,
honestly.
I mean, it's not like it didn't get fixed the next day, but he's probably just with hookers and blow.
So another annoying thing about stamps is that they're only officially sold at U.S. post offices, which have really stupid hours. They're never open when you need them to be. Or they're also sold online, but they can take up to a week to arrive. So if you need to mail something out quickly, like a bill or a transcript or something, you're fucked. Because it's not going to get there for another week.
And if you all are sitting at home thinking, huh, that's funny, I've definitely bought stamps before that weren't from the post office. Just hold on a second.
You are incorrect and you're going to jail. I hope you know that.
You are an accomplice to counterfeiting a crime.
You are a convicted convict. Because these stamps are so goddamn frustrating, it's not surprising that a large market for counterfeit stamps exists. Now, stamps were first used in Great Britain starting in 1840, which...
It's a long time ago.
That's a long time ago, but I expected it to be earlier than that, to be honest.
Yeah, honestly,
I expected it to be earlier than that. But, like, modern postage was first used in Great Britain in 1840, and the guy who invented the modern stamp, Sir Rowland Hill, was actually knighted for his invention, which officially makes him the lamest knight ever.
So he just made tiny squares that you put on shit and he
made
knighted.
People pay for it a lot.
There were peasants who fought guards and survived. They should have been knighted.
No, this man is
made
he's
a stamp.
The dumbest knight ever.
Okay, but hear me out. We still use stamps today. He had a pretty good invention.
You don't get knighted.
He probably
for
revolutionized
a stamp.
The postal service back then.
He did. He totally did. And he actually made it a
lot cheaper
for people, too.
He was really cool.
Yeah.
Nowadays.
Don't get knighted for that shit.
No, I feel like the standard should be higher.
Or something. Like,
noble.
Just give him money. Isn't
that basically what he did?
No, because knights were, like, cool. Nobles were punks.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm just saying. I'm giving this guy
the
benefit of the doubt.
Knights were, like, the good football player who's also a douchebag.
Actually
but like,
a nice guy.
Yeah, well, yeah. But he's got, like, those douchey qualities. Nobles were just, like, Chads who were like, yeah, I got, like, my sixth new car, and you're like, your dad got your sixth new car.
your sixth new wagon.
After you crashed the first five because you still can't drive.
So stamps started getting used in 1840, but it only took a couple years for counterfeit stamps to start making their way into circulation. And by 1860, counterfeits were a serious problem.
Which tells me that they've been dealing with this problem for literally hundreds of years and has not fixed it
and
yet.
Nothing has changed. Since then, counterfeit stamps have pretty much always been an issue, but a lot of governments ignore it. Now, the U.S. has a really big problem, not only with stamps, but the entire U.S. postal system, which loses about $70 billion annually.
I thought that was crazy.
How?
But, okay, think about it. Think about it. Have you ever really paid the post office to do anything?
And they have to have a ton of employees. It takes a
lot of
people. Of
employees.
They have planes. They have a fleet of planes that they need to maintain to ship things. They have all of their buildings, which they all need to function, and they need to drive their trucks everywhere.
And also, I was just thinking about, do you think that also includes not only, like, actual postal service workers, but there's an entire branch of, like, the U.S. Postal Service that's dedicated to, like, crime.
Oh, yeah, like the U.S.
So,
postal investigators.
That
it's everybody. It's the whole thing.
That too.
But it's
which
crazy.
Which is a huge operation.
It's crazy how expensive this thing is. And so you think that they would want to kind of cut down expenses at
wherever they can.
However, almost $150 million of this deficit every year is from counterfeit stamps. $150 million.
And I can't imagine how that's not worthwhile to them to fix.
And they just...
Like, how much must an investigation into this cost...
I don't know.
...in order for it to not be worth $150 million per year?
So you've got to be wondering, how does this operation work? How is this happening? How are people even counterfeiting these stamps?
With absolutely nobody on their tracks.
Unfortunately, the answer is we don't really know. It's really weird. So somebody or a group of people somewhere, they must be making a huge amount of fake stamps, and then they eventually make their way into circulation by being sold to, like, little corner stores, big chains even, and they're sold online a lot.
Like, I bet you could go to Walmart right now and buy stamps.
Yeah.
Those stamps are counterfeit.
Yeah. They're
if they didn't come from the post office, they're not real.
Most likely,
why the
those
fuck
stamps
doesn't
aren't
the government
real.
Just make a law? It's like, hey,
they could
sell
go
stamps.
To any store ever and be like, hey, who sold you those? And you'd at least have a lead.
Well, we'll talk about that more at the end, but let's get a little bit more information first. So the fake stamp market is kind of divided into two categories, two sections. So the first is stamps that are cheaper than face value. So obviously people are going to buy the cheaper stamps because it's less expensive than buying them from the U.S. Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the easiest ones to identify as counterfeit. It wouldn't be profitable at all for anybody to sell real stamps under 55 cents. Because that's how much they would cost to buy in the first place. So it doesn't make any sense for them to be under because then they
would just lose money selling something. That's the dumbest plan ever.
Yeah. If you ever see stamps being sold for less than 55 cents, you can be pretty sure that those are counterfeits. That's
so
like a 99.9% chance that those are counterfeits.
Call the police or something? What do I do with that?
No, because obviously don't give a fuck.
Alert your local police if you ever see stamps for 54 cents.
911, how can I help
you?
Yeah, I got some cheap stamps. Okay, and
good for you. Like, secure those deals, honey.
Okay, if the government says so.
Now, the second group is actually more expensive than the real stamps, but local business owners and other sellers hope that the ease of access will help sell the stamps, so people don't have to go to the post office if they're already out doing errands. They can just pick up stamps from, like, the grocery store or something.
It really
like
is so inconvenient to
it's
have
awful.
To make a special trip to the post office. Their hours are dummy stupid.
Yeah.
And like,
and yeah. So if you're going down to like the mom and pop store on the corner and you're grabbing,
or even just the grocery store,
yeah,
or anything,
you're just grabbing a couple groceries, or you're grabbing some Tide Pods or something, and you're like, oh, I need stamps, and then you can just get your stamps there and call it a day.
I need
Sounds
a side
perfect.
For my snacks.
Now we've talked about small businesses a couple of times, and I just want to clarify that I'm not saying these are the people that are counterfeiting stamps or even knowingly selling counterfeit stamps.
Well, we don't know that.
Well, we do know that.
That it's not their fault?
Okay, but you can't generalize and say that it's none of their faults.
Okay.
Maybe some store is counterfeiting stamps.
There's got to be some foot in some door somewhere to get it in there.
The likelihood of that is slim. Like, they probably do not realize that they're selling fake stamps.
I mean, any like typical mom and pop store, they're not going to have a room in the back where they've got this counterfeiting stamp machine going all day.
Nor do they have a team of people who are going to verify that
exactly.
they come from a good source.
Yeah, and so if somebody, you know, they always have salesmen coming to them with all these products that they could sell, and so if one of them comes in with stamps in bulk and is like, hey, you can sell these and make a profit, they're
going to go,
oh, yeah.
And I bet you that's
oh,
not
yeah.
the only thing they sell either.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
To make it seem more like normal.
They come in with a bunch of things, and who knows, even those salespeople might not know those stamps are counterfeit.
That's true.
Like,
you don't know how far it goes.
We don't know how this system works because we've never investigated it.
You know what I just realized?
What?
Stamps are like the police of the sticker world. Like, there are a bunch of stickers everywhere,
true.
But like, they're the only government-enforced stickers.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
okay.
so true.
Okay,
yeah.
I follow
I
you
saw
on
another
that
thing
one.
That was like,
that's
do you think
it.
Dogs react the same way when they see, like,
canine
yeah.
unit, like, as people do when they see cops? And it's true, they do.
Really?
That's really
funny. I can't remember what, like, I saw it, but there was, like, a study that was done that, like, dogs, like, their anxiety goes up when they see a dog that's, like, in uniform.
Why?
Like, I don't know. It's just
that's
the same
weird.
Way we react when we see cops.
Yeah,
yeah, but
everyone
I feel like
is constantly like,
though.
Oh, there's a cop over there. Like, act right, even though you're not doing anything wrong.
That's true.
I don't
dogs
know.
Can never do anything
it's
wrong.
One of those weird things. Dogs are amazing creatures.
They really are. I miss my dog.
So essentially what we think is happening is that these stamps are being sold to small businesses or even big chains who just don't know their counterfeits, and then people will buy them and use them without knowing their counterfeits, and then this, like, it just keeps happening. And no, you know, before this, I had no idea that counterfeit stamps
I had no
were
idea.
A thing. Nobody knows that counterfeit stamps
no.
are a thing, so you don't think about that. You're just like, oh, fuck, I need stamps.
Yep,
and that's pretty much
go
it.
To
you
wherever
go
the
stamps.
Easiest place to procure stamps
when
is.
When stamps are right next to the chips, it's hard to not
exactly.
buy them.
Exactly.
Have you ever impulse bought stamps? I mean, come
all
on.
The time.
So relatable.
So you're probably a little nervous right now thinking that, oh, what if I've used illegal stamps before?
Joke's
like,
on you, I don't remember.
What's gonna happen to me? So the good news is that nobody is expected to be able to tell a fake stamp from a real one. So there's no penalty for using counterfeit stamps. Nothing's going to happen to you. It's not against the law because, again,
nobody's going to lock you up for using a fake stamp on accident.
You're not expected to know the difference between the two. So they don't have any penalty for it, which I think is very nice of them.
But if
that
a black car follows you home, you might be a little...
Yeah.
You might get murdered.
So the worst thing that's going to happen to you is that your mail is just going to get returned and you need to go buy a new stamp. And hopefully that wasn't some important letter that you were sending, because now you're kind of screwed.
Now it's delayed, and if it's not going to get there on time, you better hope.
Yeah.
So the moral of the story is you really need to make sure you know where your stamps are coming from if you're sending important things.
Hey, wait, you know what I think is funny?
What?
Pretty sure the bookstore sells stamps.
Oh no.
As in like our campus bookstore.
Yeah. Just because like when I'm in the mailroom, people will come in with like letters or whatever, and we're like, yeah, they probably got postage at like the bookstore, and I never thought anything of it.
Okay.
I was like, oh,
I'm pretty sure
convenient.
They do. There's like a sign in there that says like you guys don't provide the boxes, the tape or anything like that or any postage.
Can confirm. So the mailroom doesn't do that, but bookstore
definitely does.
All right.
Yeah.
So there is a penalty for counterfeiting stamps, though though it's not enforced at all. There is a penalty for it, and it's up to 5 years in prison.
Which makes it a felony, for those of you that don't know. Like, counterfeiting stamps is a felony.
But they don't enforce it.
Right.
Yeah.
What the fuck is the point of that?
I don't know. So the USPS has obviously gotten questioned about this before because it's kind of ridiculous that they haven't done anything to investigate it. And they said that it would be really hard to find a solution to the issue. And the only way to stop fake stamps from sending all the time would be to shut down the machines every time a fake stamp came through. And obviously they can't do that. But I'm not really buying that. Like, I don't.
I'm not either. I understand why they can't shut down the machines, but why can't they go to the source then?
How can you not investigate this?
You can look at stores in your area and see who's selling fake stamps.
And
you should know which ones are fake.
We said earlier, $150 million is lost annually. You want to know who's paying for that? The taxpayers.
Yay.
If there's like, what, a little over 300 million people in the U.S., that's 50 cents each that we're losing on stamps every year, which, again, isn't a lot, but that shouldn't be happening. That shouldn't be happening. That's ridiculous.
If they would just put in a little bit more effort,
just a tiny bit of effort.
The issue would be, like, I totally get that they can't shut down the postal service every time a fake stamp goes through.
You could look into it.
Exactly. You could look into it.
Maybe it's the most effective way.
Something that alerts you that, hey, a fake stamp went through here. You might want to check up on that. Or, like, don't shut down the whole system. Just have a little flag or something.
Yeah.
Like, flag it.
For your own safety, there are a few ways that you can tell a fake stamp from a real one. Now, interestingly, the colors on the fake stamps are actually more vibrant and better than the real stamps, which is pretty fucking funny. And if the material feels a little bit off, that could be a sign that it's a counterfeit too, but I couldn't really tell you how a stamp feels, so I don't think I'd feel anything different
about it. I don't think I'd go around feeling up my stamps, so.
Also, wait, didn't we just cover that every stamp that's not from the post office is counterfeit?
No, it's not everyone. Like, if you go to a big chain like Staples or something, or Walmart, those are most...
We can't guarantee that they're not counterfeited.
Those are most likely real, though, because those are big suppliers. They're probably going to buy directly from the government, and they're just going to have to sell them at a higher price. But what I would not suggest is going to, like, a local family-owned grocery store and buying stamps, because even though they're not knowingly going to do anything wrong, I guarantee you they're not buying them from the post office because that would not make sense for their business to do that. That's really expensive. So just be safe where you buy them.
I think this is so funny because when Sean was telling me about this, I'm fairly certain, and I really hope I'm not the only one, I've gotten stamps mailed to me by some company for like free. Like I almost want to say it's like a catalog of some sort. That, like, they send us labels with, like, our name and, like, address on it, like, little pre-made labels. And there's stamps in those packages, too.
I've never gotten the stamps, too,
I don't think.
I've gotten the labels.
I don't think I've ever purchased a stamp in my life.
Yeah. I don't remember.
I don't know. I've not used that many.
Yeah, but I don't mail a whole lot of stuff ever.
Yeah. Moral of the story, though, buy your stamps from the post office. It's annoying, but it keeps you safe. And... yeah, you're
from being a criminal.
From being a criminal, even though there's no penalty. But buy your stamps from the post office.
I wonder how many people are actually, like, criminals without even realizing.
I don't know.
Like, how many times you have, like, consumed something that was stolen or, like, used a stolen object or...
Who knows?
Illegally downloaded music. Maybe you didn't realize that was illegal.
Yeah. Pirating
like,
something.
Just done something illegal without even realizing. All right. About everyone.
Yeah. It's time to talk about our second story, though.
Ooh.
Now, before I start this story, I have to come clean here. I totally took this idea from a podcast called Stuff You Should Know. They did an amazing episode on wine fraud, and I highly suggest you go listen to that. It's a great episode and a great podcast in general. But there's a small portion of the story that they talked about that I wanted to talk a little bit about today, and that has to do with Thomas Jefferson. Nicole, do you want to fill us in?
Before we get to Thomas Jefferson, we've got a little backtracking to do.
The Thomas Jefferson?
The Thomas Jefferson.
The Thomas Jefferson.
Hot damn.
Yes, sir.
Continue.
There's a whole world of wine collecting and dealing that needs a little bit of explaining. I'm sure you all know that there's cheap wine and expensive wine, and you can either get red box wine from Walmart.
Fuck yeah.
Or there are those ones with super fancy French names that people pretend they know a lot about.
Oh, Merlot.
Merlot.
Champagne.
Oh, God. Now, the whole debate about wine tasting is another story altogether, but basically a lot of people doubt whether or not wines are really all that different, and some tests, blind tests, have supported this idea. As far as high-end wines go, though, it's not about the taste or type of wine. They're all collector's items like stamps or rare coins or guns or anything like that. They're not meant to be used. They're mainly a status symbol, because it also takes a ton of money to get into this hobby, like millions of dollars.
With an M. Lots of millions of dollars to be a wine.
M for Merlot.
Even though they can't pronounce it right, it's Merlot. There's a T at the end.
No, it's Merlot.
Incorrect.
Then add a W.
Despite the collector wine market being worth hundreds of millions of dollars, something very important to understand is that it's often a very shady business, with most deals being done between two people in cash, no questions asked. The second big thing to know is that collector wine is all about hype and status. Most of the time, the people with huge multi-million dollar wine collections are not wine experts at all. They just know that it makes them fancy to have it, and they have to believe whoever sold it to them.
It's all about the clout.
All about the clout.
You gotta have your clout in your wine collection.
You gotta have clout.
Your California grapevine wines. Pasadena.
Is it a place?
California
is a place.
No, like California. What did you just say?
I said
California
grapevine.
Grapevines.
I swear he said deep fried wine. I was like, huh?
What?
Okay.
Seems like a pretty California thing.
It kind of does.
Yeah, honestly.
Your deep fried avocado.
Where else would you get that? Where else would you get deep fried wine than California?
You deep fry food, but instead of in water, it's just in or in like grease or whatever.
I wonder if you can do that.
Oh, no. Nah.
If there's some way to do it. There has to be.
I mean, you can glaze things with wine.
What if
you could
take,
have California glazed avocados glazed with California wine.
Oh, Jesus.
Bro, can you imagine?
And eat it on the Santa Monica Pier.
That's the most California thing you could possibly do.
There you go.
Yeah, it's pretty California.
As long as you do yoga in the morning.
Of course, on the beach.
Why
but it has to be hot
otherwise?
Yoga.
Yes.
Somehow you're
and
doing
visit,
hot yoga
it's
outside.
Be toasty.
Because it's California and it's fucking
be
hot.
It's
and
all the time.
Beverly
crispy.
Hills at least once per day.
Of course. Melrose. Anyway, so I'm thinking the way that you could deep fry wine is if you take like a little piece of like bread dough or something like that mm-hmm. and kind of like form it into like a cup, you know?
Like
and
a then, bread, like, bread bowls?
Yeah, like a little bread bowl, but like not cooked. It's still dough.
We just synced up on that.
You
bro,
did.
We thought a bread and bowl and we were like, shit.
Well, I mean, it wasn't that much of a reach.
All right, let us have this, will you?
So take like the dough, pour wine in it when it's like a cup shape, and then close it around like the wine. And then drop it in the little deep fryer.
Would the liquid evaporate?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know if the liquid would evaporate or if technically bread dough is like watertight. I feel like it would just kind of seep into the dough.
That'd be so funny if you like picked up some fried dough.
Mark my words, I'll figure out
how
to do it.
We'll try it.
Anyway, with all this base understanding out of the way, and trust me, there's a lot more to the world of wine tasting, we can dive into the incredibly interesting story of a German pot producer, an American billionaire, and Thomas Jefferson.
Big old TJ.
The story begins in the 1980s with Hardy Rodenstock, a German music producer who not much is known about, but soon he branched into a whole new life, the life of an elite wine collector. No one really knows what got Rodenstock into fine wines. Most likely it was the allure of status and fame, but once Rodenstock decided he wanted to be a part of this elite group, there was no going back. This man went hard in the paint,
he
balls
went
to the wall.
To number one real quick, 0 to 60.
Of course. Rodenstock became famous for his crazy wine tasting events, where hundreds of bottles of rare wine would be drank over week-long periods with elegant lunches and dinners, and the guest list was very exclusive.
It was like heads of states and people. It was nuts.
Let me repeat. These parties went on for a week at a time.
A week.
What do you do at a party for a week?
You get hammered. Like, that was the point of these parties, was to drink wine like it was going out of style.
Yeah.
Like a fish. Well, yeah, I guess according to him it was, if it was really rare. There were really strict rules for his tasting parties, though. Nobody was allowed to show up late at all. Everyone had to be dressed to the nines, and the
looking
weirdest
fresh.
Rule of all was that no spitting was allowed.
Hear us out, because there's let me tell you about something odd that goes on at wine tasting parties, right? So at these high-end fancy parties, you're supposed to go and just taste the wine. You don't actually drink it. So you take a sip of it.
Because nobody wants to be drunk off their ass.
So you take a sip of it, you swirl it around in your mouth a bit, and then you inhale, and that's supposed to, like, unlock more flavors. And then unlock more flavors. So you can taste the Italian soil. And after you taste it, you spit it back out. You don't actually drink it because you don't want to actually get intoxicated.
You want to remember what it tasted like.
Because you want to be able to keep tasting more and more wines. And if you have all these really nice, fancy, rare wines that you want to be able to taste, you don't want to be drunk when you're doing it.
And also, this is like a high society gathering.
Yeah.
You don't want to be
So you don't go. Yeah, exactly. So at regular parties, there was no spitting. There was no drinking the wine. However,
TJ
Hardy Rodenstock did it differently.
Said the ultimate spitters are quitters.
Yeah.
Because all of his guests had to drink their wine, and he made sure that they did. As you can imagine, this ended up with all the guests getting quite tipsy because, of course, they wanted to try all of the exclusive and fancy wines that Rodenstock had, and it would be rude to decline any of his offers. I mean, you're at a fancy party. You
got
be polite.
It. It's all about status there.
Remember, the wine world is 100% about status. So if there's a chance to try a super rare and old wine at one of these parties, you're going to do it.
Drink what's in the cup.
It's almost like a bucket list,
yeah,
I feel
like. Yeah, if somebody pulls out this super old wine from like 1940 or something.
Are you just going to look at it?
That only four bottles of it were made. You're going to go, oh, I'm getting me some of that.
You have to taste
it,
right?
But at his parties, you had to drink it too.
Because he said that you shouldn't waste it.
I mean, which
makes sense, but maybe have like an evening where you drink these glasses of wine.
Yeah, and his idea was that the history of it should be like drunk and enjoyed, not spit back out. So
makes sense.
It does make sense, but
there's another reason behind it.
Like maybe like a small evening gathering would be one where you break out a couple bottles of wine and everyone has a glass or two.
Not when you're rich.
Anyway, Rodenstock was nothing if he wasn't a showman, and he loved to save the best wines for last. I know nothing about wine, so you'll just have to believe me that he had some really cool ones, apparently.
Really dope grapes.
Because I don't know what any of this means, nor do I really care.
Whoever stepped on it was immaculate.
But at the end of these parties, Rodenstock would pull out some insanely rare wine that his guests would just be blown away
flabbergasted.
Absolutely baffled that anyone even had their hands on this. But this was at the end of his massive week-long soiree shindig fucking rager where everyone was drinking the whole time. So by the time that this super rare bottle came out for people to try, they were so drunk they didn't even know which way was up. You could have served these people prune juice and they would have lost their
minds.
They
would have gone nuts for that prune juice.
As long as you said it was from the 1920s.
Exactly, exactly.
These parties and wines were just about status, and if Hardy Rodenstock, the number one wine connoisseur in the world, was telling you that it was top tier, you believed him. You just took his word for it.
Yep.
Rodenstock wasn't just known for throwing amazing parties, though. He also had a remarkable ability to come across rare and long-lost wines. This kind of reminds me of Timothy Dexter, how he had like that uncanny ability to just stumble upon like this amazing business venture. Apparently, Rodenstock had the same thing, but with wines. He managed to find secret wine cellars that no one else, not even the most connected people in the business, had ever come across, including a czar's private stash in Russia and 12 cases of wine in Venezuela.
And each case holds 10 wine bottles, by the way. So that's 120 bottles.
And if you're selling each bottle for a pretty penny, you're making a lot of money.
And
off
that's
of that.
How he made his money. He was a wine dealer, essentially. He would find these wines and then go on and sell them for ridiculous profits.
Yeah, so he would go and sell them at auction or privately and make a fuck ton of money off of them. Some individual bottles would sell for tens of thousands of dollars.
A bottle of wine.
But Rodenstock's greatest find of all time would come in 1985 when he got a call from a contact in Paris.
So amazingly, when an old house was being torn down in Paris and they got to the basement, a secret wall was revealed. And inside of it was nearly 100 bottles of wine, which of course, that's pretty cool on its own. But the crazy part was that 2 dozen of them had the initials TH.J inscribed on them.
And who do you think that is?
Were the initials of the 3rd President of the United States and author of the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. Not the Constitution, Ethan.
Not the Constitution.
Not the Constitution.
Not the Constitution, yes.
Now, Jefferson had a long and well-known history of being very into wine. He lived in France from 1784 to 1789, and he fell in love with the wine there. And when he moved back to the States, he continued to have shipments of fine wine sent over to him.
Of course, because once you have wine in France,
you can never go back.
Mm-hmm. I also think I'm, like, ruined for a wine for life, because the first wine that I tried was when I was in Italy. Like, when I was in Tuscany, and so now I'm just like,
Wow.
You had some Tuscan feet all over your grape juice, and now you're better than us.
He's so
I was better than anybody else. I'm just saying,
your
I don't think I can ever think that box wine is good at this point. I've been ruined.
If you pour liquor and grape juice, that's wine to me. That's about all it takes.
So, allegedly, these bottles were an order of Jefferson's that had never been sent over from the late 1700s. These bottles sent a shockwave through the wine community. Every collector just had to get their hands on them, and the man who owned them, of course, was Hardy Rodenstock.
None other than
who else would have these? So Rodenstock brought one of the Jefferson bottles to an auction house in London called Christie's, world-renowned auction house. That's where, like, the top tier auctions go on, and that bottle was the talk of the night. Now, the bottle was certified by Michael Broadbent, the head of the wine department at Christie's and a world-renowned wine critic. He was, like, the top guy in the world at
the time. I'm guessing they sell a lot of wine if they have their own, like, head of wine department.
That's one of the, this is a very high-end auction house. This is, like, the best of the best. And so this bottle was certified by Michael Broadbent. Everything was good to go. So the Jefferson bottle sold that night to Bill Koch for, get this, $157,000. $157,000.
That is, like, almost as much as my house.
Yeah. And that makes it the most expensive bottle of wine ever sold. It's absolutely nuts.
Crazy.
Now, that seems like an insane amount of money, and it totally is, completely, to any normal person that is, but not to Bill Koch, who is worth $1.3
billion. A modest $1.3
billion. And do you want to know something that's going to make you feel even worse about that?
What?
He is only the 1,281st richest person in the world.
Who's the first? Do we know?
I don't know.
Okay.
Bezos, probably. Either Bezos or Bill Gates, probably.
Okay.
My guess. I think it's probably Jeff Bezos at this point. Nicole, why don't you report back to us
on that.
Now, everything was fine for quite a while. Koch ended up buying 3 more of the Jefferson bottles, actually, from Rodenstock, and was quite pleased until 2005, when he attempted to donate one of the bottles to the Boston Museum of Fine Arts. Now, the museum wanted to make sure that all the pieces they have there are authentic, mm-hmm. right? You want to make sure they're actually what they say they are. So, naturally, the museum asked for some documents proving that the bottle was real. But Koch soon realized that he had no real proof. He only had the word of Rodenstock and Michael Broadbent. But there's a slight issue with how Broadbent verified the wine. Nicole, do you have an answer for us?
I do. Jeff Bezos is the richest person in
Very
the world
nice.
At a net worth of a whopping $115 billion.
Oh, my dose.
God.
I don't know. I just found Jeff Bezos.
I'm sorry.
Have a
I wasn't sure if you looked on, like, whatever.
No, I don't have a ranking.
Forbes.
Oh, my
continue.
God. That is
That's
stupid
still wacky.
Amounts of money. So the way that Broadbent verified the wine was, instead of asking for papers or historical records or anything like that to actually authenticate the bottles at the auction, he just tasted the wine and said it was authentic.
Yeah.
Which I think is hilarious.
He tasted it, said, yep, all good to go.
Well, yeah, because they're like, hey, can you taste this wine? And he goes, okay, what? Like, is it wine? Yeah, it's authentic. Yeah, this is wine, 110%.
And here's the thing. How on earth can you verify that this wine is real? If it's a one-of-a-kind rare wine that you've never tasted before.
How are you supposed to know what something tastes like when you've never had it before?
Nobody has. I don't get it.
I guess it was just
Were you around in the 1700s when wine was being made for you to know what it tasted like?
Now, here's a conspiracy thing that I was talking about earlier, how I'm really hooked on
Thinking
conspiracy
into all
theories
these
now.
Things.
Think for a second about who would get some very handsome profits from this sale, $157,000. That's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think's going to get a cut of that? Possibly the auction house where they're selling it, and maybe the guy who was running
department?
It. Yeah.
So maybe Broadbent wasn't really all that careful with his verification, possibly. Maybe rushed it along a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to stop thinking about conspiracy so much, but I'm just saying, I think that...
Question everything.
So, getting panicked, Koch decided to contact the Jefferson Foundation for reassurance. Like, they know everything there is to know about Thomas Jefferson.
If anybody knows something about him,
they would know
them.
So he went to them to get some proof, but their answer was not very nice for Bill Koch. They responded and said that the bottles were never ordered by Jefferson. There was no record of it, and Thomas Jefferson was known for keeping incredibly detailed records of all of his purchases. The man wrote the Declaration of Independence, for God's sake.
And
I think
if he was that into wine and like that was his collection,
he would want like a list of everything.
He would want to know, kept track of that.
Someone always took his receipts as organized as him.
And so the Jefferson Foundation said there was no record of this whatsoever. So Bill Koch attempted to speak to Rodenstock about the apparent fakes, but Rodenstock wouldn't budge, sticking to his story that the bottles were authentic.
Which I think is bullshit, because how would he know either?
I know. It's just somebody found them.
It wasn't even like he found them.
Yeah. Now, Koch was out for vengeance. It was time to absolutely have this man's ass.
Mm-hmm.
And so he enlisted the help of Jim Elroy, a former FBI agent, and he set out to test the bottles for their age.
The way Elroy did this was insanely cool and involves nukes.
Boom.
If you can believe it. So there's an easy way to tell if something was produced before or after 1945, when the first nuclear bomb was dropped. When a nuke goes off, it releases an isotope called cesium-137, which isn't found naturally on Earth. It's only produced by nuclear weapons. If the inside of the bottle had cesium-137 in it, then this was made after 1945, and Rodenstock was a fraud. Unfortunately, the test came back negative. But that still didn't give a definitive answer. That only meant that the bottle was from before 1945. That doesn't necessarily mean late 1700s.
It could have meant it was from 1944. That doesn't mean anything.
Elroy had one more idea, though, and that was to check the inscription on the bottle. Using a high-powered microscope, Elroy was able to see that the engraving on the bottle was modern and done by a tool like a Dremel, definitely not from the 1700s.
Ooh.
Rodenstock's story started to unravel more when his landlord found stashes of bottles, corks, and fake labels in his apartment soon after the Jefferson bottles were found to be fakes.
It's just stacking up on him. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. This is when Koch proceeded to sue the living fuck out of Rodenstock.
The living Jesus.
I mean, this guy's a billionaire. He can throw everything he has at him, and everything he has is a hell of a lot. The court case was delayed for years, though. There was a lot of, like, international stuff. So
Rodenstock was from Germany. The bottle was sold in the UK.
It was found in France.
And Koch was from the US. And so he went to a US court to try to settle this. But also remember, these bottles were sold in 1985. Nothing about this case started to come up until 2005. That's a long time. That's 20 years. And so Rodenstock argued that the statute of limitations was up on it anyway. He said, well, it's, you know, I sold it 20 years ago. You can't come after me now for it.
Well, that's fair enough.
And so he tried to block this at every single step along the way.
Which, I mean, that's a fair argument.
It is. It honestly is. But he's a fraud at the same time.
Unfortunately, the court case was delayed for so long, and on May 19th, 2018, Hardy Rodenstock passed away.
Oof.
So we will never know. There was never any justice for Bill Koch. Now, there is no hard factual proof that Rodenstock was forging these wines, but there's tons and tons of circumstantial evidence that he not only faked the Jeffersons, but that he knowingly sold millions of dollars of fake wine in his career. I think the moral of the story here is that the hype around wine is really kind of pointless and toxic to its own community.
It just completely destroys it. Like, completely and utterly.
Yeah.
Because there are so many fake bottles running around that people go...
Even the top-tier connoisseurs don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I have to have that because if I don't, I'm going to look stupid. No, you're not, because the bottle's fake anyway. Just
Who
enjoy
cares?
Some wine.
These wealthy collectors don't even know what they have, and wine counterfeiting is still running rampant today, but most collectors just ignore it and lie to themselves about their own collections for their status. As long as rare wine remains a status symbol, there will always be counterfeiters making millions off of it.
And this was only one small story. This is only really four bottles that we even talked about today.
Yeah.
this, the whole wine counterfeiting, it is so much more of a problem. So really, go listen to the wine fraud episode from Stuff You Should Know, because they talk about the whole scope of the issue. But we only talked about four bottles, really. And there's just so much more to it. There have been multiple people arrested for this. And you've got to realize, hundreds of millions of dollars
have
been wasted on fake wine. It's absolutely insane. Like, wine, I feel weird saying, like, wine professionals after we just roasted the whole community. But people who genuinely do know what they're talking about, like real wine historians, they've gone into the wine cellars of these, you know, huge collectors and said, yeah, like, half of your stuff is fake. And they go, no, it's not.
Nah, you're lying.
Nah.
Say psych right now.
So this is a really, really big problem, and it's just going to keep on going if the wine community doesn't change.
And I just thought it was really cool the way they, like, verified those bottles of wine, because believe it or not, you might not think about it like this, but all of that, like, the isotope testing and with the microscope and stuff, that's forensic science.
Yeah.
And there's no dead body involved. It's just anywhere that the law applies to science.
Nicole, are you going to be a wine bottle investigator?
Maybe.
Oh, maybe she'll go to Tuscany.
I was going to say, you and your Tuscany tongue, your taste buds, you're elite now.
Tuscany.
Oh, yeah.
All right, it is time to get into our third story, though. Now, this one is definitely one of my favorite stories of all time, and something really cool about it is that there's almost nothing out there on the internet about it, like, at all.
It's kind of obscure.
So hopefully this is the first time any of you have heard about this. Now, we've talked about some pretty serious crime today, right?
Uh-huh.
With some fake wine costing hundreds of millions of dollars and postage stamps.
Also costing hundreds of millions of dollars.
But this one might just be the most nefarious of all. The story is about two men from Turkey who counterfeited popsicle sticks.
Popsicle sticks. You heard him right.
Who gives a flying fuck?
Just wait. You will in a second.
Now, I would like to say we have some healthy debate on this show. We don't always agree
absolutely.
About everything. You know, we get into arguments every now and again.
And I am a very argumentative person.
But something I think we can all agree on is that popsicles are really good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, any opposition?
Popsicles
no?
are
okay,
really great. And they're even better when you're in the summertime, the sun is beaming down on you, you're out on the lake on your kayak or something,
oh, yeah.
on the beach. And what better than a popsicle to round off that kind of day? You know? It's it's just absolutely
the amount
great.
Of popsicles I consume from like June to August is out of this world. I love popsicles.
Now, popsicles are a great treat, but also a lot of times I have like little jokes or something.
Yeah.
Written on it. Yeah, that's really fun.
That was the best shit ever.
So in 2012, a company in Turkey took it one step further than just jokes and printed coupons for free ice cream bars on some of the popsicle sticks, like right on the popsicle stick. And that was amazing. So not only were you going to have a popsicle, good fun.
But you might get a free ice cream.
You might get free ice cream out of it.
Yay.
That's really, really cool.
What's better than popsicles? Ice cream.
Exactly. So two guys in Istanbul saw this as a huge opportunity, though, and soon a plan started developing. Now, the two men, Ahmet and Cem, got their hands on one of the winning sticks and started mass counterfeiting them, copying the winning label onto thousands of other sticks over 3 years.
Can you even believe that? Like, what kind of criminal mastermind thinks about that?
They got all of these counterfeit popsicle sticks with the winning coupon on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were a lot of winning popsicle sticks, but they copied one of them onto thousands of them. And they started going around to supermarkets and whatnot all over Turkey. Like, this wasn't just a little, they didn't just go to one store. This was a huge operation. They went all over Turkey and handed these in.
Yeah.
And they got all this free ice cream from it. So you're probably thinking, well, what are they going to do with a bunch of ice cream?
Sell the
eat
ice cream.
It.
Sell the ice cream.
See, this is why he's a criminal. This is why he's a criminal. This is
Ahmet and Cem.
So, yeah,
it's more fun to break the law than to follow it. Are you kidding me?
Ahmet and Cem went around to all these stores, got all the ice cream, and instead of eating it or anything...
I mean, they had to have eaten some.
Oh, they 100%
did. You can't
did.
Tell me they didn't eat a single one.
They probably ate the first couple and then went, wait.
We've got more.
Wait a minute.
They were hanging out there. What are we going to do with all the ice cream? Eat it, I guess.
But are
what
you
about
sure?
Money?
So they stockpiled all of this ice cream for years, and then they sold it back to the stores that they took it from in bulk at half the price of market value. Is absolutely brilliant.
Bro, you gotta be patient.
It's amazing.
This is the cheapest.
Where did they hide all these ice cream?
That's a great question.
I'm picturing they had some like big industrial walk-in freezer or something that they were renting out. Like, I don't even know.
Do you think they had coolers and they just put ice in it and sometimes they would rotate from like some go in the coolers and some go in the fridge, and then like the next day they would switch them out. And just like, damn, this is really keeping up. It'll pay off one day, and they just keep shoveling it in.
But how genius is this? They get all the ice cream for free and then sell it back at half the price of market
value.
And
if you're a store like looking to buy that, that's the cheapest way to get your ice cream.
That is an insane deal.
It's a win-win.
They should have just comboed stamps with it.
They're guaranteed to sell it. They should have sold stamps with it too. You're entirely right. A package deal.
Just slap them on top.
Right.
What if the ice creams that they like sold back to the supermarket also had winning sticks?
Oh, the cycle continues.
I thought you were going to say, what if the ice cream they sold back had stamps in it? And I'm like, oh, a free stamp when you get the right ice cream.
Counterfeit stamps.
So this sounds like a fantastic plan so far.
Oh, yeah.
Right? There's only one little hitch in it. When Ahmet and Chem went and handed in their sticks to get the free ice cream, the stores took those sticks and gave them back to the original company so the company could keep a tally. Now, obviously, the company knows how many they sent out. And so then when they started getting back way more sticks than they ever produced, they went, wait, man.
Hold on, just one second.
Something's not adding up here.
I'm adding two and two and getting fish. What's going on?
And so obviously the company knew something was wrong. And so they contacted local police. And unfortunately, when you're only two guys and you've gone to just about every grocery store in Turkey and are now somehow mass-selling
ice cream dealers,
it's not that hard to figure out who's been doing it.
All I gotta say is if you can easily copy the label, they can't be mad about it.
So after,
I mean, they can, but it's their own fault.
Yeah. After 3 years of this plan working just fine, which I think is absolutely fantastic.
Genius.
That's just funny.
It's pretty damn good.
Genius.
Yeah. Ahmet and Chem were arrested on June 27th, 2018, and I'm not sure what happened to them. I hope they're doing well. I hope they didn't really get put in prison or anything.
They probably
I don't know. I think it depends on how much money they made, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because if they could have made a lot of money.
Yeah, potentially.
And that
if they
also
had thousands of ice creams.
And not only does that screw other companies out of their profits because they're no longer selling their ice cream, that also screws the original company because they just lost a fuck ton of ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they didn't like factor in how many free ones they were going to give away.
I hope nothing bad happened to them, but I don't know.
What if they burst in there and they were all ice creams and they were like, hold on, like, I'm reaching for my ice cream. He's got a gun!
Oh, no. Not Chem.
Ice cream leaks out of their chest. They're like, oh, no.
All right. That's all we've got for you this week. Thank you for listening. And be careful where you buy your stamps from.
And your ice cream, for that matter.
And your
wine.
Be careful where you buy everything.
And everything's a conspiracy, too.
Yeah.
Oh,
after,
God.
Go check us out on Instagram at Rule3333, Facebook at the Rule of Three Podcast. Leave us a rating and review, and we will see you next week, guys. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.